All right, welcome to another To Be More podcast, where we have conversations with interesting people and all things Baltimore Metro. I'm TJ Smith, your host, and we want to learn more so that we can be more. We all know that there are challenges, so we must talk about solutions with a diverse group of people. And today I'm joined by Bob Wallace. Wallace is an entrepreneur from Cherry Hill and a Poly High School grad. He was a 2020 independent candidate for mayor, and today he serves as co-chair of the Baltimore Community Lending's campaign cabinet, something I am interested in learning more about. So good day to you, Mr. Wallace.
Good day, TJ. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well. You know, a lot going on in Baltimore. Yes. You and I both share something in common. We ran for mayor of Baltimore.
That's right.
You know, oddly enough, a lot of people will criticize you for trying to perform a civic duty to help the community. But we know we did it from the right place, trying to improve the situation we're in. How's life been since the 2020 run, which you made as an independent candidate and arguably a very good showing, coming in just over 20%, which was a pretty high threshold and the highest, I believe, ever for an independent candidate in Baltimore?
That's correct, TJ. I mean, I think that even though we came in second place, I think we changed the game. I think prior to me running as an independent, people didn't even consider the possibility that someone could, you know, outside of the Democrat or Republican Party could even be competitive. And we certainly were competitive. I would tell you that if I didn't run, I was going to get behind you, support you. So I want you to know that. But been busy since the campaign, you know, got back involved in the business. We've expanded our company internationally and still creating jobs and helping people in the city to build an economic base. So we've been pretty busy.
Yeah, well, job creation leads to opportunity, and Amen. Opportunity is what leads to driving down crime.
Absolutely.
And the economics of all of this is something that I think we'll get into at some point today as well. Because I hear a lot of arguments about people don't care if people from the county come into the city for stuff, don't care, you're scared, don't come. But I'm like, well, those tax dollars create opportunities and create jobs, and those shuttered doors take away opportunity. So we align on that, and I appreciate you, man. And again, our thing was we wanted to help the city, and you are helping in a different way, many ways, but in a different way. Talk to me about this Baltimore Community Lending's campaign cabinet. I'm unfamiliar with it, and I think a lot of people probably are. What is it, and what does your role as a co-chair entail?
Absolutely. So thanks for that question, TJ. So the Baltimore Community Lending Organization, its mission has always been to help accelerate the formation of businesses in Baltimore City, you know, through financing, through technical training, through mentorship, through building alliances and partnerships. It's always been involved in doing that. And the reason, TJ, I got involved is if you remember during the campaign, you know, my main focus in the campaign, my major platform was economic empowerment, right? Because of what I did was, when we looked at all the issues facing Baltimore City, right, and we went through the Toyota 5 whys analysis, where you have a problem and you ask the question 5 times why. So why does this exist? You know, let's take, for example, TJ, the squeegee kids, right? So you say, well, why? Why do these kids, why are they out there on the corner, right? Why? Because they need to earn some money. Well, why do they need to earn money? Because they don't have a job. Well, why don't they have a job? Because they don't have the skills and education. Why don't they have skills and education? Because they dropped out of school before they could finish. Why did they drop out of school? Because their home environment was such that it didn't build a foundation for them to stay in the education system. And so if you do the 5 whys for every single problem, you get down to the root cause. And what I found, TJ, in my analysis, our analysis when I ran for mayor, was that if you get to the root cause, we concluded, TJ, that it was economic lack of economic power, you know, lack of economic activity, lack of economic involvement, lack of economic commitment. And so that's why our campaign, we honed in right on, okay, how do we build this economic base? And so when I was involved, when I got introduced to BCL, I said, I mean, there are many organizations in the city, TJ, that purport to support minority and women and small businesses in a very effective way. But I found that BCL did it the most effective way that I've seen, grassroots, to make it happen. So when they asked me if I would chair this effort, right, to raise money, right, so that we're not always in a position where we have to ask for money, right? And that's one of the weaknesses of many of our organizations, is that they're just not properly capitalized. And so they spend a lot of time, TJ, chasing the dollar. So our thought was, okay, let's be proactive here. Let's go out and let's raise money ahead of time before we need it. Therefore, we can fund the operation, fund businesses that I think the city needs in order to turn the corner on its dysfunction.
So this organization supports entrepreneurs, basically, or small business owners. So is this for Baltimore City or is this for the Baltimore metro area?
That's a great question. So the main focus, TJ, the main focus is Baltimore City. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that the tentacles of the organization do reach beyond the physical boundaries of Baltimore City. And here's why. Because if I've got a business that maybe, let's say, TJ, is headquartered in Baltimore County, but it is economically involved in Baltimore City and creating jobs in the city, mm-hmm. then that company helps to fulfill our mission, which mm-hmm. is to help the people of Baltimore to be economically empowered through entrepreneurship. So that's kind of what the scope is.
So, and this, you might not be awfully familiar with this. I know the Howard Street corridor down more, I believe that's Howard in Utah area, where they have several minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses in that area that got grants or got opportunity to right. build out there. Are you familiar with that? And did this group assist in that, or for people who might be familiar with what occurred there, could this group help an entrepreneur with something like that, where they essentially get a grant that pays for a year free rent? I say a year free, they got a grant for a year's worth of rent, something like that. And is that in the world of what we're talking about?
Yeah. I'm familiar with that effort there on Howard Street. And certainly BCL could be a ancillary support for, you know, businesses like that, you know, in those areas. And those are the grassroots kinds of businesses that BCL really focuses on, right? These are businesses that are in the community, that provide a key service for the community, that employ people from the community and provide them wraparound services so that they have a higher probability of being successful. If we can figure out this business entrepreneurship effort in our city and have it be sustainable, TJ, we can turn this city around. But until we fix the economics of Baltimore City, we will never fix the dysfunction and the hopelessness that we see, especially in the African-American community.
Yeah, I mean, considering it's a 62% African-American population mm-hmm. community, and the percentage of entrepreneurs that are African-American drops off drastically from that.
Sure does.
This is obviously something that's needed. So what are there specific qualifications that one would have in order to apply? You know, so person has a new hair salon or a new hair distribution product center, and they just don't have all of the capital they need. How do you qualify for this?
Absolutely. So like with most business institutions and programs like this, TJ, so there is a vetting process, right? Because one thing we have to do, and this is not just BCL, but any investor like you and I. So, I mean, I my wife and I, we personally invest in small businesses to try to help them. Of course, our dollars are limited. We don't have unlimited, you know, dollars and wealth. But what we do have, we want to be intelligent about how we deploy it. So BCL does the same thing. So it looks at a business, it invests it, evaluates it, evaluates the entrepreneur themselves. You know, there's an old saying, TJ, that, and I follow this in investing myself. I bet on the jockey and not the horse. In other words, okay, I bet on the young woman, the young man who is in charge of that business enterprise, that their character, their intelligence, their ability to work hard is more important to me than the business itself. So if I can find a good jockey, right, I can drive an average horse to be successful. And so there is betting, TJ, that we do on the businesses because we want our dollars to be effective, our limited dollars to be effective.
So does the person or the group of investors, whomever they might be, husband and wife, they have to do an interview with you all?
That's correct. So they will fill out, that's right, TJ. So they fill out application. They would be interviewed. A really thorough vetting with the individuals. But once we say yes, once we're in, we're like your best friend. I mean, the things that we can do. You know, I mentioned earlier wraparound services because one of the things that I've learned, and as you probably know, TJ, I know you know this. I've written 8 books on the subject of entrepreneurship. And my first book was called Black Wealth Through Black Entrepreneurship. And one of the key points I make in that is that if we are to build sustainable Black and Brown businesses in this country, in Baltimore, like and otherwise, we have to not only provide them opportunity, but we provide them wraparound services so that they can be successful. Right. Now, some of them are not going to be successful. That's the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. But if we can increase the probability that more of them will be successful, then I think we'll be doing great good for our city and for our community.
So this sounds like it's a relationship that starts, but then becomes an ongoing relationship of mentorship.
I think that's everything
for their success.
Yeah, TJ, I totally agree with you. I mean, that's key because I mean, you know this. I mean, you're a business guy too. I mean, the journey of business, right, from start to finish, it is a difficult journey, and you cannot make it by yourself. Right. You know, I made that mistake as a young entrepreneur. I thought that, you know, I could do it by myself. You know, I had my degrees. I was a hardworking guy. I thought I was a smart guy, but I learned I'm not so smart. But, you know, I tried doing it by myself, TJ, and I learned it's impossible. And so the faster you can learn that lesson as an entrepreneur, the better off you'll be. And BCL provides an avenue for entrepreneurs who can humble themselves, right, and admit that they need help, right, provides the help that I think many of them need to be successful.
One of the things you mentioned were the 5 whys, and you were talking about using the squeegee people as an example of those 5 whys.
Yes, sir.
Recently, we had the tragedy that a lot of people said they were waiting to see happen, unfortunately. Yes. And a motorist was killed. A motorist is riding on Conway Street. This is near Oriole Park, in between Oriole Park and the Inner Harbor. Was approached by the squeegee people at one of the intersections there, Conway and Charles area, and some sort of altercation took place. During that altercation, the driver decided to pull over and get out of the vehicle with a bat and went after one of the squeegee people. One of the others, or that particular one, we don't know yet, pulled out a gun and shot and killed the individual. Sad set of circumstances all the way around.
Yes.
But what we also learned was that exact same intersection on that exact same day had the attention already of police and City Hall. State Senator Antonio Hayes was reportedly assaulted at that intersection by a squeegee person, and a police report was filed. A gun, which was later discovered to be a BB gun, was taken off of a squeegee person at that intersection before this murder took place later on that day, 4:30 in the afternoon, rush hour.
Right.
Talk to me about what you talked about, the whys, and you being a former mayoral candidate. What can we do? Because there are some who are big time apologists for the squeegee people, and you hit 5 big questions. And the last one, is it something at the home life that led them down this path? how do we do something where we help get them on the right track?
Yeah, that's a great question, TJ. And look, TJ, I can tell you, I have been at that corner myself, and I personally have engaged. I've talked to my wife about this the other day, engaged with these young men. And I'm from Cherry Hill, and I don't think anybody's more conscientious and more interested in these young men being successful. But there was something there, when I got there, there's like 30 of them, mm-hmm. And we had a verbal confrontation, right? So, by the grace of God, we were able to move on. But this event, these kinds of things, this is inevitable. It is inevitable. It is the domino effect, right? When you have these young men out there on the corners harassing people, doing what they think what they want to do, this is inevitable. Mm-hmm. And if we don't deal with this right now, this is going to continue to happen. So what would I do? Number one, as mayor, number one, make it clear that this is unacceptable and that you will not be allowed to be on the corners harassing drivers. So I would put together like a SWAT kind of force, TJ, that would be focused on these squeegee kid situations. And this SWAT force will be directly focused on getting these kids off the corners. Now, I'm not saying getting them off the corners and put them in prison. I'm not saying that. But they got to understand this is unacceptable. Second thing that we do, we give them a path. We give them a pathway to do the right thing, right? And the pathway is, we establish some kind of, business opportunity, at car washes or something else that can use these young men to give them an opportunity to earn income, which is why they're in the corner. They're there to earn income. They don't have any other way to earn income. They provide them a pathway to do that. But here's the problem, TJ. Here's the problem. The problem is this is a pipeline issue. It's a pipeline issue. What I mean by that is, so if I take off these 100 young men, let's just 100, if I take them off the corner now, guess what? There's 200 and behind them in a pipeline waiting to fill their spaces because the pipeline that we have inherited in the city is such that these young men with no skills, no direction, no training are coming through the pipeline and we as a society, we got to deal with them one way or the other. Right. But as mayor, my number one job would be safety of my people and the people in the city. So that would be, TJ, my initial approach. But as you said in your campaign, you knew so well, this is a systemic issue. It's a system. What we're seeing with these squeegee kids, this is a symptom of a deeper issue that will take time to address and resolve. I get that. But in the immediate, in the current, no, you got to come down hard. You got to make examples and make it clear that this behavior will not be accepted and there'll be consequences.
And I want to make sure you're clear and we're clear. You use the term SWAT. And if I remember correctly, you're using that just as a group of people to go out and assist the young people, not a SWAT team of police officers.
Good point, TJ.
So I know that's not what you meant, but I know some people will take it out of context and I don't want it to go that route because some people are looking for an excuse not to address the issue. And yeah. I'm saying it, I'm being frank about it because you just said it. I've said it multiple times. It's systemic. I don't believe in arresting them, but you as an entrepreneur, if you're about to put a new business somewhere on the line of the squeegee workers, and you have employees who or customers who say, I just if you open one somewhere else, I'll come, but I'm not coming there. As a city, and we know that this happens, this is a reality of what happens.
Right.
That doesn't work from an economic standpoint, right?
No, it doesn't. And me as an entrepreneur and a resident of the city, that does not work. And thank you, TJ, for helping me be clear on what I meant by SWAT. I did not mean by an armed military group coming in. No, what I should have said, and I misspoke that, is a focused team of people. And here's another thing I would say. That team of people should be female officers. Hmm. Female officers. Why? Because I think there would be a different dynamic with these young men if there are female officers who make up this focus team that I was referring to deal with the squeegee case.
Now, I have to say, I know we got to get back into what I asked you, but I think you're right on target with that, because Black females especially are less victimized by the squeegee people if they become hostile.
Right.
And white men, Black men are more victimized, because there's some people who will tell you it doesn't happen. You must have been aggressive. I've never been aggressive towards them at all. And I've been cursed out a few times, but I've had pleasant interactions as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I've given some young people some money before. It's not that, but I've also been cursed out. And
yes,
and
me too.
I do think we have a responsibility as men. We have a responsibility as a community to teach young people no means no. And if they said no, move on. No doesn't mean keep spraying and keep asking. No, it means no. Don't do that.
Right.
Because it crosses lines. It goes into how you deal with people in relationships.
It does. It does, TJ.
You know?
It does, TJ. But the challenge we have, many of these young men never learned that lesson at home. See, in your home, in my home, I know my mom and daddy, we learn discipline. We learn respect for authority. We learn respect for the elderly. I mean, that was built into us as young kids in Cherry Hill and in your neighborhood, your background as well. If you're not trained and taught that as a young child, then you come to the streets and you have a whole different paradigm as to how you're going to be respected and operated. And that's the challenge that we have. So to your point, TJ, about in businesses, absolutely, TJ. Look, in this post-pandemic world, I don't need to have my business in Baltimore City.
Mm.
As you know, I do, but I don't need to. I could be anywhere and do what we do in technology and cybersecurity and biometrics. As a matter of fact, TJ, quite frankly, most of my staff works virtually now all over the country.
Right.
So I don't have to be in Baltimore City. But I would tell you, TJ, it's getting tougher to attract talent to come to Baltimore City, especially in technology areas that we're in. It's tough because they'll say, Bob, I love the company. I love the job. I just don't want to come to Baltimore City. I'm afraid. That's a problem for businesses.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't understand why, you know, a lot of the really left progressive types want more programming and more things, but they don't want to address the issue that's driving out tax dollars. That is a reality of economics. You need the economics to create the programming and create things. And that's back to what you're working with the community, Baltimore Community Lending, funding. And in order to continuously get that funding, you need people who have the means and resources to do so. So one of the other questions I wanted to ask you from your mayoral days to now, if you had an opportunity to sit in the room with the current mayor, a phone call with the current mayor, and he said, look, I want to know what one, two, or three big ticket items you had as ideas to implement that I haven't done or haven't done well. How can you help me and help the city with the ideas you had that I haven't implemented? What would those things be?
Absolutely, TJ. That's a great question. And by the way, when I conceded, I think you were there with me, when I conceded the election to Mayor Scott the night of the campaign, I made it very clear to him, sir, I'm available to you to assist you any way that I can. I haven't gotten a call, and that's fine, but I made myself available. So I think that there are three things I would say, TJ. Number one, what I would do is, and I said this during the campaign, I would divide the city into its neighborhoods, right? And I think we calculated 50 something neighborhoods technically in Baltimore City. I would have a unique crime prevention strategy for every specific neighborhood. Not one program strategy for the whole city, but for each neighborhood. Why? Because as you know, TJ, every neighborhood is different. Every neighborhood has a different tolerance for crime and for violence and for how we deal with police and all that. So, okay, let's get specific and intentional for those neighborhoods. for those same neighborhoods, those same 54, whatever it is, TJ, the number is, I would have, Mr. Mayor, create a unique economic development strategy for each neighborhood. What will work in Cherry Hill, TJ, will not work in Guilford. All right. What will work in Guilford will not work in Forest Park or in Harlem Park. So we have to be specific with our strategy on how we address the crime and violence and how we address the economics. The third thing I would do, TJ, if I were talking to the mayor, he's got to get this education system fixed, right? I know that's a long-term issue, but here's the issue, TJ, it's the pipeline. Mm-hmm. The pipeline. So if I'm continuously producing young people with no skills, no education, no potential for future opportunity, where are they going to end up? They're right. going to end up on the corner of squeegee kids.
That's right.
So I can spend all the resources I want on the back end of this pipeline. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. if I don't deal with the front end of this pipeline, I'm going to be in this continuous cycle of violence and crime and hopelessness.
There are three good, tangible things that could, I believe, have an impact. Certainly a big chunk. That's a big bite, the 50 crime plans. But the uniqueness of it, that's actually one of the talking points from the mayor with the district realignment, that every district is unique and needs its own unique strategy. But back to that economics end of things.
Absolutely.
Something I think that you would appreciate, actually, tying on to that, when you talk about the educating these kids, Prince George's County became the first jurisdiction in the state of Maryland to make it a requirement for graduation. It's a half credit course in financial literacy.
Amen.
Can you believe that right now, and it might be glossed over, but there's nothing that you're going to leave high school with. And I'm a firm believer in leaving high school college ready or job ready. And if you don't have financial literacy, and if it's not taught to you, I was fortunate that my mom taught me, but if it's not taught to you, and if we know that part of the gap that young people have is their parents aren't educated enough to give them what's necessary, then it's the government, right? So, you know, what do you think about that as a requirement to learn what a credit score is, learn what an APR is, learn right. what your lending and borrowing and buying power is by virtue of this credit score and paying your bills and taxes and all?
Absolutely. So, TJ, so look, I've been preaching this sermon for decades, right? Anybody who read my first book, Black Wealth Through Black Entrepreneurship, they will see a couple of things that I mentioned in there in terms of overall policy and strategy. Number one, as you said, is financial literacy, right? Understanding how money works, right? And how money works for you or how it can work against you. The second thing that I pushed in that book, TJ, was as you include training on financial literacy, that you also have required training on entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting, TJ, that everybody has to become an entrepreneur. I'm not suggesting that. But what I am suggesting is that everyone can think like an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And if we give them the training to do that, along with the financial literacy training, then we will not only have kids who are more competent in managing the complexities of our new world, but who also may get excited about the future for themselves. And I think that that's another area, TJ, that we can focus on. I've talked to universities, and I won't give their names, but I've talked to universities years ago, TJ, and I suggested, I was talking in this case about engineering school students, I suggested that every engineering school should have a required class for their engineers, right, on entrepreneurship. Why? Because I've learned that much of the wealth creation that will happen in our society will be from engineers and scientists and technical people who are creating these new technologies. And I think that same thinking in terms of our school system should also include entrepreneurship training along with financial literacy training.
Yeah, the financial literacy, the entrepreneurship, it just builds a better, well-rounded person, in my opinion, that can save themselves. I mean, if, as we know, you know, you have a couple of bad payments or late payments, it's like 7 years to get off your credit report. And that if you're 18 and this happens, then your buying power is limited until you're 25 and you're spending more to borrow money until you're 25 if you get it together. And that's if you learn. So, right. You know, this is how generational wealth is created through.
You know, it is. Economics. It is, TJ. As you know, I have 5 kids and 10 grandkids. All of my children, grandkids and grandkids, they know about financial literacy when they're young. They know about entrepreneurship. Okay, so you start with your home and your family, and I've done that, right? Mm-hmm. And now we need to expand that to the broader community.
Yeah. And, you know, in Prince George's County, it was the kids who pushed for it. The student government boards, the student representative that's on the school board, they pushed for it and they testified for it. And it's not very often that you'll see kids asking for a new class that they must take to graduate. So I commend them for that. The first graduating class will be 2024 that I believe has to have it. I believe it was 2024. And it'd be interesting, you know, just to, you know, track that, you know, year 2030 and see if you can take a sample of kids that graduated before this was required and post the retirement or post the requirement to see if it had an impact on their ability. And here's another thing about Prince George's County. Again, yes, they've had their issues with violence and some societal issues, social issues there, but they're also home to the 5 of the 10 most affluent areas for Black people. Absolutely. In the country, with the highest median income for Black people in the country. So, it almost is that perfect fit of let's teach you more about this, how some of what you see in your communities came about.
You bet.
Hopefully that gets expanded through the state, along with just the general education, right? General reading, right? So,
well, you know, TJ, I think you know this. So my cousin, my first cousin was Wayne Curry. Mm-hmm. Wayne Curry was county executive for Prince George, first African-American county exec for Prince George's County. Wayne's father and my mother were siblings. So I was very involved in Wayne's campaign when he first became the first African-American county executive for Prince George's County. Wayne said a couple of times during that campaign, he said, Prince George's County is the first jurisdiction, he said, in American history that went from majority white to majority Black. But education levels went up.
Wow.
Income levels went up. Wealth went up. First time. Mm-hmm. Prince George's County is not only one of the wealthiest majority Black institutions in the United States, but in the world. Mm. In the world, TJ, in terms of concentration of people of color. So it's a very special place, very special place.
950,000 residents, the majority being African American.
Yep.
You know, something to be learned. We have places right here in the state. So, really quickly, as we wind down here, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Baltimore's Inner Harbor redevelopment. Do you have any thoughts? You know, again, I think I like to talk to former mayoral candidates because our perspectives are broader than just what we might be known for. So do you have any thoughts on the Inner Harbor redevelopment?
I do, TJ. And thank you for asking that question. What we should not do is allow outside big money developers to come in and take control of that asset, right? This is a great opportunity for the city to really rethink how can we take urban assets using urban workforce, using urban entrepreneurs, right, to create a wealth, to create an economic mecca. I mean, how can we take this opportunity to do just that? My concern would be, once again, we turn it over to these outside developers. I know there's a local developer who's involved with that, and hopefully he sees the light. I don't know. But it needs to be, it cannot be the typical Baltimore development, TJ, because what's happening is the wealth creation that occurs in many of these developments do not touch the people in the communities in a meaningful way. So we've got to be brave and bold about how we use that asset.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I have a lot of faith in David Bramble.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is. And I think he wants to do right. I do think we should have a think tank of ideas to bring something great to the area. I get to explore in the region, whether it's DC, Philly, New York, and see some of their development, and we should be catching on. Got to talk about solar and Power 52. I know your son is the main man in that area, but it's something that you're attached to as well. But the solar industry, and you know, whether we're using more solar to power our homes here and how it can help, you know, Baltimore. The food project in Southwest Baltimore, the colonel who works there had a big idea of using solar panels to power an urban garden and water and everything else. What are your thoughts on how we can leverage solar, and just briefly touch on what Power 52 does and what it could do for Baltimore?
So just to be clear, so Power 52 is different from Biff Energy.
Right.
I am the founder of Biff Energy, mm-hmm. and not Power 52. My son's involved with that. We do collaborate mm-hmm. on many things. I think, TJ, one of the ways that we build the economy of urban centers is we identify an emerging economy like solar, like renewable energy, and we invest at being the best in that particular area. So what we're trying to do at Biff Energy is we're trying to develop 1,000 solar technicians in Baltimore City and in Baltimore region. And the idea being that there will be workers there so that when this economy called solar energy, the industry, right, when it really becomes exponential in its growth, that we're positioned as Baltimoreans to be able to be a part of that. So we're working with that to make that happen. We work with Power 52 and other entities to help prepare our people. TTD, that's how we become an economic engine. If you look at Pittsburgh, if you look at, you know, through steel or Detroit, through the automobiles, every city has a major industry that it is a top player in. We need to be a city that is a major, where we are the leader, major player in that emerging industry. And I think that solar and renewable energy could be that industry for Baltimore.
And we have to prepare the workforce for
that's
it.
Right.
Because that's right. If we don't have the workforce, then people not from here are going to take those jobs.
Absolutely. That's what happens. I mean, I can go anywhere, TJ, and get workers, okay, to do my solar project. We built over 100 megawatts of projects. We're looking at community solar. We're looking at ways to use solar in creative ways. All that's good. But what's important for me and for Biff Energy is that when we do projects, that the wealth creation opportunity and potential passes on to the community. That's how we're different from most companies.
Yeah. Well, before we get out of here, I need to go back to where you're co-chairing the Baltimore Community Lendings Campaign. Should people just Google that, or how do they get in touch? How do they learn more or submit an application for review if they want to try to apply for those funds?
Sure. So if they like you said, TJ, if they Google Baltimore Community Lending, that will take them to our web portal, and they'll be able to get more information on there. They can call me directly, and I can direct them to the right people at BCL. I mean, it's a wonderful organization, TJ. Watching Bruce is the CEO. She is a force of nature. She's a brilliant woman. She's passionate about what she does here for the people of Baltimore City. And I couldn't think of a better leader to lead us in this area during this time. So those are the ways that we can do that. And I can be helpful too, TJ, if people need to be directed.
Well, cool. Well, I tell you, we could talk for days, especially about, you know, some of the plans for Baltimore and how we would address them. So I thank you very much for your time, Mr. Wallace, and thank all of you for listening and watching. This is To Be More. We'll be back with another episode soon as we continue to talk all things Baltimore and Baltimore Metro, not just about the problems, but the solutions, the opportunities that we have so that we can make this an incredible place to live, work, and play. I'm TJ Smith, and we'll talk soon. You can find this podcast where podcasts are located. Take care.